Hello everyone, this is James and welcome to the Notorious Banker Podcast. As of right now, 2,831 amazing followers at BankBetterGuy on Twitter. Guys, I can't say it enough. Thank you so very much for your support. I really do appreciate it. And of course, all the dozens of people on Patreon, patreon.com/notoriousbanker, where for as little as $1, you could help support the Notorious Banker in his fight against big banks. $2 gets you additional podcasts. $5 will get you my book as it's released. Thank you so very much for that support. I really do appreciate that. It's been kind of a crazy week so far. You know, I posted a podcast on Monday, and it was in regards to the interview that Brian Moynihan, CEO of Bank of America, had with Time Magazine, and what a shit show that was. I can't believe how many downloads of that podcast I have had in the first 36 hours of posting it. It's something that I am stunned by, to be honest with you. And I really think it's a twofold thing. I really do believe a lot of people within the Bank of America community are listening to that podcast. So hello, everyone who works at Bank of America. But seriously, you know, a lot of these people who work for B of A were tweeting out this article as like, here's our dear leader showing how to get things done. And I mean, it's just total bullshit. The things that he said in there when it came to cashless society and, you know, paying for everything with your phone and all that. Like I said, I understand and I get all that. That's where the world is moving. That's where the future is going to be with cashless stuff. But keep in mind, there are millions of people currently unemployed. Millions of people unemployed, and they're using a debit card. Some of them are from Bank of America in Maryland, Arizona, California, Nevada, and they can't get money out of the ATMs, and the branches are closed in a lot of big cities, or if they're open, they have to stand in an hour-long plus line, and a lot of the times they're being turned away because they can't get the full amount out or what have you. And of course, they have to use this debit card against their will for purchases. And a lot of the times, those debit cards are shit. A lot of those times, those debit cards will charge you a fee to check your balance. It'll charge you a fee to even get declined. I have a debit card that I get that's a prepaid debit card for donating plasma. And they screwed up my donation money last week. And I usually get $35 or so a donation. Go to the grocery store, and I was going to take my cash out so I could put it in my B of A account, and it was declined. I'm like, well, what the hell's going on? I know exactly how much I just got. And they said, no, it looks like it was declined, so I had to use my other card in order to make that purchase at the grocery store. And then I checked my online banking for the plasma donation card, and it was showing that my money was never put in there. And the company who runs the card, it used to be Citibank, but now it's some smaller bank, charged me a quarter for every time that it was declined. So I got a fee for basically being poor. I got a fee for having a zero balance. Someone forgot to hit a button at the plasma donation center. And, you know, all of a sudden, boom, 50 cent charge for something that wasn't my fault. And it's not like the plasma donation center can refund me those 50 cents. Now, I can give a shit about 50 cents here or there. But the fact of the matter is, my experience, what happened last week, is similar to what happens to a lot of people with these unemployment debit cards. So Brian Moynihan's interview was very tone deaf in the fact that, you know, he's saying that people should want to use their phone, people should want to do things electronically. Well, it's all well and good to say that they should want to, but when you force them to, or when you give them a piece of plastic that you're not honoring the cash withdrawal for because you don't have money in the ATMs, the branches are closed, or you're turning people away, then that's what I take issue with. Brian Moynihan's a CEO. He makes $26 million a year. He's not the highest paid CEO, which I thought was astounding. But the fact of the matter is, he makes decisions based on what's best for Bank of America in his eyes. And I got to tell you, although sometimes it's a lost leader to want to help, you know, just the basic customer get their money every week, get the $300 a week in unemployment that it would be here in New Mexico at a Bank of America branch, and you turn those people away, then that's wrong. So that's what I take umbrage with, and that's why the whole podcast is there. So people who are listening from Bank of America, you got to understand that that's not a knock on the CEO just because I left the company, you know, a couple of years ago. But the fact of the matter is, he is not understanding that there are millions of people who need him, who need Bank of America right now to get that cash out, and they're just not doing it. And I know I made a lot of fun with the CrossFit reference when he mentioned that he does CrossFit workouts every day. And, you know, I just got back from an hour and 45 minutes at the gym on Tuesday night. And I'm hurting. I'm sore. I gave it my all. I had a hurt ankle, and I still busted my ass, and I still sweat up, and I got toned and just ripped. I just felt like a million bucks, even though I was dead tired at the end of it. And I see that, and I'm like, I couldn't be a bank manager and do that type of workout. So there's no way that he can be the CEO and do those types of workouts and still have time in the day to make those big decisions. My biggest thing with that is, you know what, like I said, I'm not going to hate, I'm not going to bully on people, but the fact of the matter is, there's no way that he can be that invested in working out and be the CEO. There's just not enough time in the day. I mean, have you met people who are just physically jacked that wasn't part of their professional job, that had enough time to do that and do an important job, like be the CEO of a company? It's very rare, unless you're the CEO of a company that has to do with people getting physically jacked. I mean, I don't know. I don't mean to hate. I don't mean to bully. That's not what it's about. But I don't like interviews like that. I don't like people disclosing things like that, because it just comes off as a little, I'm better than you, and I don't like that. You know, if you're Bank of America, if you're the bank for the people, or at least that's what you want people to believe, don't say, hey, I'm so above you that I can do CrossFit workouts, be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and help millions of people, when you know those millions of people know that you damn sure didn't help them. So to all the people who work at Bank of America, to all the people who don't work for Bank of America, listen to that podcast, thank you so very much for listening to it. Like I said, it was one of the more viral podcast that I posted, and it was the first one under the Notorious Banker banner. Go figure. Today's podcast is going to be a little bit of a theme. We're talking breasts, and I know what you're thinking if you're someone who takes issue with just controversial things right off the bat. I'm going to do this as seriously as I possibly could, because there's one serious story that came from a recent decision in the courts that involved Bank of America and breastfeeding. I'm going to tell you a story about my history with having to do with that, and what I believe that means for Bank of America and their supposed support of mothers and women in the workforce. And I got to tell you that I used to believe that they were a very strong company supporting women. I can give you a million stories of how they don't support women, all from my, you know, two eyes that I saw at my branch. And then also, we're going to talk to someone who runs an OnlyFans account. I know a lot of you know what OnlyFans is. A lot of you may see that on your bank statement, and your wife or girlfriend may say, hey, what the hell is that? Well, we all are adults here, and we all know what OnlyFans is. But I recently, well, not recently, but about a year ago, I helped a person get back a couple hundred dollars in overdraft fees from one of the big banks, and she's been a follower for a long time. And you know, in this day and age of gig economies and people being Uber drivers and, you know, DoorDash and all that stuff, there are some people that are turning to OnlyFans and Patreon, just like I do Patreon. I don't get nude on there or anything. But there's a lot of people who are turning to that to make a quick buck, and it's actually very profitable. So I wanted to talk to her about her OnlyFans account, not necessarily about the nudity that goes on to that, but more about the financial side of things and how I feel that that's the most interesting thing. Because if a major bank knows that you're doing that type of work, a lot of the times they're going to close your account out. And then if you're depositing that money into the bank account, it doesn't count as a direct deposit. So you're not actually getting credit for an actual job according to the banks as well. So it's this, you know, it's still this type of fringy type of work that people are doing and going through, but they're not getting the credit that they so rightfully deserve. And yes, I do believe that, you know, if you want to pose nude on the internet and someone is going to pay you money for it, that is a job. And I don't care, you know, what your beliefs are with that. The fact of the matter is, there's still effort that has to be put in into getting that done. So after this brief promotional consideration, we're going to talk about these two topics. So please stick around for more Notorious Banker. Hello everyone, this is James, the Notorious Banker, inviting you to join me on Patreon. That's patreon.com/notoriousbanker. For as little as $2 a month, you can support the Notorious Banker in his quest to fight back against big banks. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, and Citi routinely give bad service to their clients, costing customers time and money. with the Notorious Banker's Vigilante Customer Service, I use my 13 years experience in the banking industry to show you how to challenge big banks and fight for what is rightfully yours. The Notorious Banker has helped rescue over $1 million since April 2019, and it continues to grow. For as little as $2 a month, you can also get bonus podcasts where I talk about controversial things that are bank-related that no one else talks about. I recently talked about sex workers in banking, as well as alcoholism and drug abuse within the banking industry. No topic is off limits. Other price tiers will get you additional bonuses, but you can join the dozens of patrons and the thousands of followers on Twitter at BankBetterGuy in combating big banks by signing up to the Notorious Banker's Patreon page today for as little as $2 a month. That's patreon.com/notoriousbanker. Once again, thank you so very much for your support. I really do appreciate it. All right, and we're back with the Notorious Banker podcast. So, you know, the topic of this podcast is basically about breasts. And like I said, I wanted to be serious about this because there's one serious topic on this segment that we do want to talk about. And the second one has to do more with working in today's America. But this one is an interesting one to me because of my personal experiences with seeing this firsthand. So there was a lawsuit that was done a couple of years back. And it was out of Tucson, Arizona, very close to yours truly, the Notorious Banker, here in Las Cruces, New Mexico. It's about 3 hours, 40 minutes away. And it was basically an employee of Bank of America. I don't know the role of this person, but she had filed a lawsuit and a complaint with the Department of Labor, essentially saying that Bank of America failed to provide a reasonable break time and space free from intrusion. So she can express breast milk, so she can pump, so she can, you know, get breast milk in order to feed her baby. So, you know, as a 37-year-old man who is married, but I don't have kids, I can tell you right off the bat that I can't relate to this at the moment. I do want to be a father. I do want to have a conversation about this whenever, you know, a child comes into this world. But I understand it just from the perspective of, you know what, I have nieces and nephews, and I have, you know, sisters-in-law, and I understand the need to have time to do this type of thing. As you can tell, I'm already stammering on my words here, but, you know, as a man, I'm really trying really hard to try to relate to this, but I can relate to Bank of America failing to provide break times. So this complaint was filed, and this person, whoever it was, succeeded in getting this agreement signed by the U.S. Department of Labor and Bank of America. Her complaint allowed this to go through and for Bank of America to make concessions for mothers who needed to express milk to nurse and what have you. And, you know, it's an important thing because Bank of America, first of all, prides itself on being a great place for women to work. And I got to tell you that I did believe that a lot during the first several years that I worked at Bank of America. When I was on the lower rung of things, whenever I was a teller or even whenever I was a sales and service specialist, I did believe that because I did have a lot of coworkers who were moms. You know, a lot of them were single moms or a lot of them, you know, were married with a couple of kids. And I understood the trials and tribulations that come with being a parent and being a spouse. So I saw that firsthand. But I want to read an article from KOLD News 13. It's, I believe, the CBS affiliate in Tucson, Arizona, and the headline is Bank of America signs agreement with Department of Labor to help nursing parents. And it says parents working at Bank of America locations in Arizona will now have access to better resources when it comes to nursing their children. That's a new rule that came out of an agreement between the International Bank. Funny how Bank of America is an international bank. It's weird seeing that. And the U.S. Department of Labor signed earlier this week. This move comes after an investigation found that nursing parents weren't given adequate break time or space to breastfeed or pump at one of the bank's Tucson locations. Oh, I wish I knew which one it was. I would totally flame them out online, according to a news release from the Department of Labor. Federal law requires nursing parents provided with space other than a bathroom to pump or breastfeed, as well as adequate break time for parents to do so. Changes will start at Bank of America locations in Arizona, then be implemented nationwide. The company will have to implement modifications within their buildings, geared towards nursing parents and provide training to managers on the nursing policy. I'm going to get to that in a second. As part of the agreement, nursing parents who want to take parental leave will receive a new parent information packet and information on federal policies of nursing. And the U.S. Department of Labor, of course, it's a government entity, has this very official, very robotic statement that they put out where they talk about the agreement signing with Bank of America that implements systemic changes enhancing the employer's working environment by taking defined steps to accommodate the reasonable break time for nursing mothers' requirements of the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA. I mean, it's a really nerdy thing, and it talks about how Bank of America has 170,000 plus employees in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it talks about facility modifications, and Bank of America will prioritize modifications nationwide based upon immediate nursing mother space requirements. In addition to the physical modifications, the company will provide internal training for some managers, I don't know why not all the managers, and human resources personnel, and provide expectant mothers who intend to take maternity leave with a new mother's packet. And I mean, I think that's good. I think, you know, a lot of people who are new moms who may not have the support structure can, you know, get information that they probably may not get otherwise. And I think that part is noble of Bank of America. I mean, they were kind of forced to do that, but at the same time, I think that's really important too. And then it talks about federal law that says that you're supposed to provide reasonable break times for an employee to express breast milk for her nursing child for 1 year after the child's birth, each time such employee has the need to express the milk. Employers are also required to provide a place other than a bathroom that is shielded from view and free from intrusion from coworkers and the public. I'll get to that in a second, which may be used by an employee to express breast milk. So, you know, the important thing with this particular news was that there was going to be modifications to Bank of America buildings, that there was going to be a spot for people to pump or to breastfeed their baby if the baby was there and allow adequate break time for them to do so. So the space part is the interesting thing here. And before I get into my rant here, I want to say one thing. You know, we're talking about breastfeeding. We're talking about breast pumps and everything like that. If for some reason on my rant I use a slang word for breasts, if I use the T word, as we know, T-I-T-S is what we're talking about here, I do not mean it in a misogynistic way. I just mean it whenever I'm ranting. Because I really do feel what I'm about to say, that if I do say that, I do not mean that in a derogatory way. I'm a full supporter of women's rights. I'm a full supporter of mothers' rights, because I had over 100 co-workers at Bank of America, and a lot of them had newborn babies while I was there, including one story that I'm going to tell in just a minute here. But when I see Bank of America so willy-nilly coming to this agreement, I'm a little skeptical. Okay, so here's why. The whole thing about the break time, we'll get to that in just a second here, but the fact that they have to implement modifications within their buildings geared towards nursing parents. So I've seen co-workers have to go to the restroom, and we used to share a restroom with the general public, so they used to have to lock it, and they used to have to basically block customers from going into the restroom while they pumped their breast milk. And we had a lot of pissed off customers saying, hey, who the hell's in there for 10, 15 minutes at a time? And that used to be a big issue for a lot of customers. And that really, really bugged me. And, you know, because to have to be locked in that bathroom, especially not a clean one, because we didn't even have freaking janitors most of the time at that branch, is just really a disgusting thing. And I felt so bad for the moms there. But this is a true story, okay? So I had, you know, like I said, I had several coworkers who were new moms during the time that they worked with me, and a lot of them had to pump. I used to have to deal with my coworkers before and after to kind of coordinate lunches and whatnot, because they're going to say, hey, I have to pump, I got to go right now. And what would happen with Bank of America, and of course this article here is saying that they weren't given adequate break time. That's absolutely true. Bank of America never gave those women adequate break time, especially at my branch. Whenever you had to pump milk, guess what? It was during your lunch. And you know, you had to get all your shit together in order to be able to pump and to be able to sit there and do that. I don't know the time period for that, but I used to see them just sitting there with their food just staying right there. It's not even getting eaten, and it gets cold, and they're just there pumping. You know, that's what I would be told. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, what the hell are they going to do? You know, they're supposed to pump for their kids, and they can't even eat. So when else are they going to do it? What if in the middle of the day they have to pump again? I used to see managers roll their eyes. I used to see managers say, James, can you wait? Not go to lunch because she has to go pump again. And I'm like, shit, why do you put this on me? Like, why do I all of a sudden, I can't go to lunch because you can't allow two people out at the same time? And that's a Bank of America thing. Oh, two people can't go to lunch at the same time. And I know what a lot of you are thinking is like, don't you guys all go to lunch together? You know, don't a couple of you go to lunch and go eat out? I ate out with my coworkers like twice because they never, very rarely allowed us to go to lunch together because they're like, oh, we're going to be shorthanded. We need to have people just in case it gets busy. And it's always that just in case that always got people. So the adequate break time, I totally understand. And, you know, to the stupid person, to the average person who maybe doesn't know their rights, Bank of America telling them, you know, you could pump during your lunch break. That's gonna be something that's burned in their brain, and all of a sudden, that's what they have to do, and they're like, "Man, I can't eat, or I can't eat with an adequate amount of time because I got to pump." And to me, that was always the wrong thing. That was always horrible because, think about it. Think about, you know, the limited amount of time that we had for lunch. You know, it was 30 minutes, and Bank of America managers, I had three regional managers, tell me in their own loving way, you know, federal law says we don't have to provide you a lunch break, or New Mexico law states that. I'm like, who the fuck cares about that? Give us 30 minutes. I work my ass off for you. Give me 30 minutes to go eat. So yours truly, of course, I don't have to pump any breast milk or anything, but whenever it was time for me to eat, the closest meal to me was McDonald's. And I literally would have to haul ass. I'd have to go, you know, speeding. I had to speed through this road here, go 45 miles an hour to hit McDonald's. And it was usually 5 or 6 cars deep, and it was a 10-minute wait. And I would order 2 or 3 McChickens. That's how fat I was at that time. Pound those McChickens while I'm driving back to the fucking bank. And I would get there with like a minute to spare. I didn't even have time to sit and relax. So imagine someone who has to pump for their child and also find time to eat in that 30-minute period. That's bullshit, and that's not fair to them, okay? And that was the thing that always bugged me about my location. I have one former coworker and friend. I guess she's a former friend now since I haven't talked to her in years. Heather. And she had that issue where one of the reasons why she had left Bank of America was because they were treating her just like ass. Because they would talk crap to her anytime that she would have to have a pump break. And she would be locked in the women's bathroom at the time. We had 2 bathrooms at that time. She'd be locked into the women's bathroom just pumping. And they would get mad at her saying, hey, you took so long. What took so long? Now, the physical part of it, I don't know. So, you know, like I said, ignorant male here talking about it. But I'm sure it's not a set amount of time. I'm sure it's not going to be, hey, 9 minutes, 15 seconds on the dot each time. No, things happen, I'm sure, and things may take longer than they should. But I used to have a manager that used to just be on her ass. You took 15 minutes, and that means you're not going to take a lunch and whatever. And it was just always this point of contention where she said, fuck this, I'm quitting, and I'm working for Hertz. And she worked for Hertz Rental Car for 2 years until she found out that Hertz sucked just as bad as Bank of America. And she actually went to Bank of America again until, guess what? She ended up having another kid, and the whole breastfeeding thing came to a head again. And then she left again. That is a true story. And that is unbelievable that she had to go through that. She left the company because of the stress that our manager was putting her through for breastfeeding. And then all of a sudden, she goes to another company who just treats her like shit for having kids, basically. And then she goes back to the bank where she has another kid. And all of a sudden, it's be like, oh, she's going to be on maternity leave. And then she's going to have to do this and that. And it just became this stressful thing where she said, I'd rather not work than have to work at Bank of America anymore. So I saw that totally 100% with her, and that was frustrating to her, and she left the company about 5 years ago or so. Then I want to tell the story about one of my closer friends that worked with me at Bank of America, Bianca. And her and I were actually pretty close. She was like one of the sweetest people I ever met. Her family's awesome. Great person through and through. She came to the company like 2013 or so. And she was a 20-hour teller. I remember seeing her name on the scheduling thing saying, who's this Bianca person that's going to work with us? And she worked as a teller. She showed initiative. You know, she was persistent in what she did. And then all of a sudden, I got my job as sales manager, meaning I was vacating my job as service specialist. And normally when you're that new of a teller, you don't necessarily get that job because it is a supervisory role and you usually have to be with the company a year or so. But she said, I want it. I want that job and I'm going to work hard for it. No one else volunteered at my branch. So she got the job 3 months in. So she was a service specialist and I taught her everything I could about sales and service and maintenance and all that stuff. And she did a good job. We were successful at what we did. And then our assistant manager left about a year or so after that. And she said, I want to become the assistant manager. And I told her, I said, hey, I know you're going to be my boss. And you've only been here a short amount of time. And I've been here longer, but you should go for it. I don't want that job. You can totally have that job. So she applied for it and she got it. She became assistant manager within a couple of years of working for the company. And that was a meteoric rise for her. I was really, really proud of her. And it's something that I talked about with other coworkers, saying, hey, look, you can jump that far ahead too if you put your mind to it and work hard. So somewhere along the way, during the course of her being assistant manager, she got pregnant for a second time. She already had one kid, and she got pregnant for a second time. And it just became this, oh, we're going to be without Bianca for a while. She's going on maternity leave, and she's going to be gone 10 weeks. And we're going to have to figure out, James, can you switch a vacation day over? Because we're not going to have coverage on this day. And that's the thing. Whenever someone goes on maternity leave, all of a sudden, all the other employees have to kind of alter their schedule. And, you know, if you're a team player, cool. I'm glad that you're able to do stuff like that, but you shouldn't have to. Okay, you shouldn't have to. So the bank would always say, hey, I know you said you're going to have off on April 21st. Can you possibly move that? That's my birthday and I was going to Vegas for the weekend. But are you sure? Can you go the next week maybe? Because then so-and-so is going to be back and then you'll be able to do this. I'm like, fuck. Like, why do I have to join in on the conversation because someone else got pregnant? And I think a lot of the resentment that people had with mothers at Bank of America came from that. It's like Bank of America all of a sudden became the most paranoid fucking place with employees. You know, they have one teller in the lobby. They have two people walking around asking if you want to open an account or something. But oh, God forbid, two people are away from the bank at the same day. They freak out. So we would always adjust these things, okay? So she went on maternity leave, and she, you know, she had her kid. And then she came back. And, of course, one of the things she had to do is she had to breastfeed. And, of course, the baby wasn't there, so she had to pump. But being the assistant manager is literally like being Bank of America's bitch. And excuse my language for saying it that way. But that is the worst job to have, assistant manager at Bank of America, because you're basically a glorified teller. You have to cover at the teller window whenever a teller's sick or whatever, and you have to do all that, all while still doing your managerial duties. Assistant manager also has to take care of auditing shit, so if you're covering the teller line because someone's sick, you still got to do all your auditing paperwork. You got to ask, you know, audit questions to all the staff. You got to make sure all the paperwork is turned in, and you got to manage the tellers. You got to do overrides. You got to provide signatures for checks over their limit. You're always running around back and forth, so it's a really stressful job. I mean, just the steps that you take extra being an assistant manager are that much greater than someone in my role, for instance, because you're always walking back and forth. Hey, Bianca, we need you to sign this check because it's over our limit. Hey, Bianca, I need a second person to approve this wire for me. And she would go back and forth over and over again, and it was stressful. So, of course, the thing with her was she didn't have the opportunity to take breaks to pump. And I know this because we would talk about it and we're close personal friends, and she would say that sucks and I hate that they don't allow me to do that. And the great thing about her, and I don't mean this as a knock to her, because it's not, and to the person who filed this complaint against Bank of America in Tucson, it's not. I'm glad that you know the rules, because you know there's so many people who exploit the rules, there's so many people who exploit the laws. And I don't necessarily mean exploit in a bad way. I'm glad that people know their rights. And as a mom, a new mom, she knew her rights, what she needed to do and what she could do federally to make sure that she had time to breastfeed and all that. She could have very well been the person that filed this lawsuit if it wasn't the Tucson lady. So she always had this point of contention with our manager saying, "Hey, you need to give me time to do this." And it was always, "James, can you reschedule your lunch?" Or so and so, can you come back a little bit earlier because she's gonna have to pump and we don't have any other time." So it always became the pain in everyone's ass because a manager wouldn't step up with initiative to just say, "Hey, you know what, Bianca, go ahead and take 15 minutes, take 20 minutes, take all the time you want." Mind you that this person is a mother herself. So, you know, that wasn't happening, so she had to do it on her lunch break or whatever. And there were times where maybe my branch manager would not be there for the day, or maybe she was in a meeting with the regional manager, or maybe other people were tied up, and I needed help as a banker. You know, anytime we're doing cashier's checks or if we're approving an IRA withdrawal or anything that requires two signatures, you need to have a second person literally just approve your documents. And especially if you're opening a new account, you got to go through that whole spiel of, "Hey, Bianca," or, "Hey, manager, I opened a checking account for Mr. Johnson here. He didn't want a savings account. I did ask him about a credit card, but he wanted to not do it at this time," so on and so forth. You have to go through what I used to call the car wash. So I would take all my documents, and my manager wasn't there. And I'm like, "Well, where the shit is Bianca at? I don't know where she's at." So I'm just looking for her. I'm hoping, you know, she's just in the bathroom or something, or maybe she's at a lunch. And there was four times, I had documented four times, so I used to keep a little diary of my time at Bank of America, where I would go in the break room, and she would be fully exposed. Her tits would be out, her breasts would be out. Excuse my vulgar language there. But her breasts would be out, and she would be pumping, and she would have the pump on her. And I'm a gentleman. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." Like, it freaked me out. I didn't want to think that I was intruding in on her time. But at the same time, I needed to have a manager to actually approve documents, or a manager to be a manager for me, and she was the only one there. And she was cool about it. She's like, "No, come on in. Just come on in. I'm not embarrassed. Go ahead and do that." Even though she's not embarrassed, it was still hard for me because I had to talk about my fucking banking stuff. I was like, "Hey, yeah, I opened an account for Mr. Johnson, and he wanted this and he wanted that." And she literally had her breast exposed and her, you know, her pumping her milk. And that was so awkward. That was the most awkward thing, and I felt bad. I felt embarrassed for intruding in on her, but my thing was I felt so freaking bad for her. I'm like, "Dude, let her pump, let her come back, and still give her lunch. What the fuck does it matter? Her job has nothing to do with my job. So don't make her feel bad, or don't make her feel like she's asking for too much because she has this one extra thing she's got to do." That's the whole thing with medical conditions. And you know what? Being a mom is a medical condition. You need to do certain things at certain times, just like taking medication for an illness you have. It's just part of life. So, you know, Bank of America is not one to adjust shit. And they weren't going to adjust shit here. So I know this because guess what? The person in Tucson was not the only person that this ever happened to. I just gave you two examples of that. That was happening everywhere. I know it was. I've had other people tell me similar stories that worked at Bank of America's in my local area and across the country. And this is nothing new. This is nothing that was going to change until, guess what? The feds came in and said, "You got to change the way you're doing things because you're violating these ladies' rights. These ladies have a right to pump their milk for their kids. Because you know what? If you're not giving them that time, you're basically fucking starving their kids. Or you know what? You're making them doing it during their lunch break, and of course they're going to pump instead of eat, and you're fucking starving them." So I'm glad the federal government had the guts to say that to Bank of America, and Bank of America acquiesced. So I'm glad that there's going to be adequate break time. I don't know what the break time mandate is. I don't know how many minutes that's going to be, or if it varies, or how they're going to adjust it. Do they have to put that on their timesheets? And if they do, why the fuck is it Bank of America's business that they have to put on their timesheet, "Took a 10-minute break so I can expose my breast to pump milk"? What is it Bank of America's business? I have no fucking clue, and it's stupid. Here's the second part of it. And see, I'm already ranting. I'm 20 minutes in. So the second part of it was the company will have to implement modifications within their buildings geared towards nursing parents and provide training to managers on the nursing policy. The training part, I have no doubt, is going to happen. I fucking took two trainings every week, every single week for 13 years minimum. They love to train. They love their testing. They love to just take people's eyes away from customers and train for shit that has nothing to do with them. And the nursing policy thing is important, but guess what? That's one of like 1,000 trainings that you're going to just click through and not actually read. Take a guess on the questions. If you don't get 80% correct, you're going to try new answers. And guess what? You're not going to learn anything. So the training thing means absolutely nothing to me, period. End of story. The thing that I don't get, and the thing that I think is truly astounding, is they say that the company will have to implement modifications within their building geared towards nursing parents. Basically meaning that they have to create a space, whether it's a pod, I know my wife and I were talking about these pods, or create a little room that way some, you know, nursing mother can pump in private without Jameses of the world walking in trying to get stuff approved, you know, and I think that's really important. I'm really glad that they did that agreement. But here's a story I want to tell you. And it's a weird analogy, but I'm going to go with it anyway. What the hell? Why not? I love KFC. I love Kentucky Fried Chicken. I grew up with that. My mom would get that almost every week. We would have the bucket of chicken, the mashed potatoes, the corn, the biscuits, the parfaits, all that stuff. It was a part of my life every week, it seemed like, from age 5 or as early as I can remember. Until I was an adult, age 18, even 19 or 20. Around 2007 or 2008, in my hometown of Socorro, New Mexico, and the town nearby, Belen, New Mexico, KFC abruptly closed. I mean, they literally closed down. You know, one day they were there, and the next day they said, oh, we're out of business. And I always wondered why. I'm like, it was always busy. It was always thriving. That was something that people in my hometown ate a lot, I can tell, because I had classmates that worked there in high school. So I knew how busy they were and how many hours they worked and everything. So I knew that that was a big thing. Working at Bank of America, I was able to talk to someone who was a manager at KFC at the time that it closed down. I said, hey, well, what happened to KFC? Like, and there's like, oh, the old man who owned it retired. He didn't want to put up with it anymore. They wanted to do upgrades and he just decided, no, he didn't want to do it. I'm like, upgrades? What upgrades? And he's like, yeah, you know that KFC was trying to do that grilled chicken, KGC, Kentucky Grilled Chicken? I was like, oh, yeah. Well, apparently you had to buy some new oven or something, and it was $30,000. And when you're a franchisee, you have to sign that agreement saying, hey, I got to buy this oven or I got to buy anything new that the company requires of me in order to offer these new food products. And the owner didn't want to do that, so he lost his franchise license, so it just closed down, and they have no plans to reopen. I'm like, wow, that's weird. Very bizarre. I never thought about it that way, and that was my introduction to learning about restaurant franchises in my 20s. It's like, hey, whenever you become a franchisee of this place, you know, and they say, hey, we're offering fucking coffee, you have to buy the coffee machine. I mean, that sucks. It's just crap. So because he didn't want to get the grilling machine for Kentucky Grilled Chicken, he lost his franchise license, and KFC closed down permanently in my hometown of Socorro, New Mexico, and it's gone forever. It's been gone 12 years or so. There's a Domino's Pizza, funny enough, where it's at now, and there was a Mexican restaurant in between that. So no KFC for like an 80-mile radius because of this grilled chicken thing. So here's my point. I have a theory that Bank of America is closing thousands of locations. I really do believe that they're going to close thousands of locations in the next few years. They're trying to push people to mobile. They're trying to push people to ATMs. They're trying to make customers not go in. That way they don't have to pay lease agreements for all these expensive properties all over the country. And they could just have everyone do it online. And the people who don't want to go online or go on ATMs can go get fucked. They don't want them as customers anymore. So they're going to lose all these locations, and all of a sudden things are going to be more virtual. This is why I think Bank of America entered into that agreement to modify their building so willy-nilly, so easily, which is surprising because I really don't think Bank of America would do this. I have a feeling that they're going to close a lot of locations, because if they don't, then all of a sudden they got to do construction to 4,300 branches to create these little nursing rooms or nursing pods and spend all this money on that to maintain a building that they don't even want anymore. They're really planning on doing that? I don't believe it. So maybe they gave them a deadline. Maybe the government said, hey, you got 2.5 years to get this shit done. Well, believe me, in 2.5 years, I believe 1,500 branches can possibly close. So that's 1,500 less of those nursing rooms that they have to do. And I really think that they entered that agreement saying, hey, you know what? If we can drag this out as long as possible, we don't have to spend that much money because we're going to close this branch anyway. So if the government says, hey, why the hell don't you have a nursing pod on First Street in Maine? They're going to say, well, you know, we're actually closing the First Street in Maine location in about 90 days, so we didn't want to do construction because we're no longer going to have this location. I really believe that that's part of this. I really believe that they agreed to the modifications within their buildings, knowing that a lot of the buildings won't be Bank of America's very soon. They did so much construction to the branch that I worked at before they abruptly closed in 2018. They modified a hallway. They actually filled in a hallway, and they cleaned up our break room a little bit, and then they modified our bathroom to be ADA compliant because it wasn't before. And they did all this stuff at the cost of probably six figures to get this shit done. So six figures times 4,300 branches, let's just say it cost $10,000 to create this space for nursing mothers times 4,300 locations. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money that I know Bank of America doesn't want to part with. So what I really think is going to happen is they're going to close these branches down, or close a lot of branches down, and they're going to put the ones that are pertinent there. And that's another thing too. Do they have to ask all the workers, hey, do you plan on getting pregnant in the next year? If not, then we're not going to build this. Or do they have to build it immediately? It's just in the thought that there might be a pregnant person there. Most bank employees that are in a branch are women, so I figured that they would have to do it anyway. But that's just something that just really stuck in my craw, was the fact that they agreed to building modifications knowing damn well that they're creating these centers that don't have employees anymore. So if you have call centers, if you have all these other places that female employees work at, they have to do that too. Who's to say that they're not going to say, hey, work from home. Everyone work from home. That way we don't have to do all this bullshit. And I think that's where it really is starting to kind of fill in the blanks of what actually happened here. And like I said, being a new parent, I imagine, is hard. I'm not one, and so I don't know, and my wife isn't one yet. But I do know the things that do come up in time are the things that end up being the most learning on the fly. Not everyone knows their rights. This person in Tucson, Arizona, here's the sad state of affairs, everyone. You know, working in a place with 90% women, I literally worked with like five men the whole time that I worked at Bank of America. You hear someone complaining about, hey, I don't have enough time to nurse, I don't have adequate break time, I have to do it the bathroom breaks, I have to use my lunch break to breastfeed. This is ridiculous. I'm reporting Bank of America to the feds or whatever. Most people would say that that person is a bitch. Most people would say that that person is a horrible person for just making all this stink, making all this noise because of what's her problem. She, you know, no one asked her to become a mom. She became a mom herself, so she has to deal with the things, deal with the breaks. No, absolutely not. You know what? Like I said, I'm a full supporter of women's rights and mother's rights and everything like that. And I don't think that way. And I don't think most people should think that way. You know what, the whole thing with Americans with Disabilities Act, you want to make sure that there's ramps, you want to make sure that there's adequate access for everyone. While being a new mom, there has to be certain concessions that banks have to make in order to make sure that that person is able to be a functioning member of that workforce, and you got to give them adequate space, adequate materials in order to fulfill that role in a good way. So we'll see what Bank of America does with this. I'm very skeptical about the building modifications. The training stuff is going to be there, but guess what? You're still going to have managers who are still set in their ways. Maybe they're misogynistic old men, or maybe it's misogynistic old women. Or maybe it's people who just believe that the way things are done now is not the right way, and they're going to go back to thinking the way things should have been in the 90s, and you're shaming people. You're shaming people for having, you know, a drape over their shoulder while they're nursing their kid, even though you can't see anything. Or the fact of the matter is that you're going to shame them for having to go do a medical procedure, which is pumping milk for their newborn kid. in the room and saying, hey, you're going to deduct that from your time. You're going to have to fill in your timesheet and say, hey, we're not paying you for that. No, that's fucking stupid, you know, and I really think that Bank of America learned a lesson here, but, you know, at what price? Yeah, they're gonna acquiesce to this person, and they're going to allow them to get, break time specifically for that reason. But the building modifications, I'm not so sure about. I just don't trust Bank of America's sincerity with that, because I do know that so many banks are closing, and now in this time of COVID, with all these temporary closures, I think that's just buying them more time to not have to do shit like this in order to say a year from now, 6 months from now even, hey, you know what, we're going to close this location down. Then really, what concessions did they make to mothers of newborns who need to pump? Like I said, I do this story in support and solidarity with every working woman that I worked with, especially the ones with newborn kids that I worked with over the years. I skipped a lot of lunches. I came to work early in order for these things to happen because I cared a hell of a lot more about them than Bank of America ever did. And this segment is dedicated to you guys, especially to my friend Bianca, who is a great person and one of the few people I truly miss working with. She left the company about 2 years before I did, and she's in Colorado now doing bigger and better things that honestly Bank of America doesn't deserve of her. So congratulations to Bianca. Thank you so much for being a friend, and thank you for allowing me to tell this story, because it's really an important one. We're going to keep the theme after this brief promotional consideration. We're going to talk to a follower of yours truly at Bank Better Guy on Twitter, who is running an OnlyFans account, and I want to just talk more about the finances of that and how, despite the fact in this gig economy, it's hard work, and I don't care what you say, it is hard work to do that. It's a sales job. Someone like a big bank will not ever honor it as a big job, so I want to talk about the finances of it and the banking aspect of OnlyFans and nudity and whatnot. So please stick around for more Notorious Banker. All right, my friends, and we are back with more Notorious Banker. Now, we're going to divert from the normal talking shit about Bank of America and Wells Fargo. One of the things I wanted to do when I converted Wire Bank Sucks into the Notorious Banker podcast was I want to tell stories, okay? So one of the great things that I absolutely loved about working at Bank of America, and yes, there were some things that I did love about working that place, is I loved meeting people. I mean, honestly, you got a one-on-one conversation with, you know, 100 people when you're a teller, but they're not deep conversations. But when you're a banker, you get 15 to 20 really good ones. You know, you get to learn about people. You get to learn about their families, their jobs, their goals, their ambitions. I mean, it's basically a one-on-one interview every single customer. And one of the skills that I did develop was interviewing skills. And I've said it before, Howard Stern, one of the more influential people in my life, he was able to ask questions of the most random people and make it sound interesting. And I tailored my banking skills from Howard Stern's interview skills, because I knew that he just knew how to make people feel comfortable, make people think in a different way than the standard, you know, job interview type thing. Or especially with bankers, robotic. Holy shit, it's robotic. I remember opening my account 15 years ago at Bank of America, and it was uncomfortable. I felt like I was in a parole hearing, a probation hearing or something. You know, it's just so, you know, what do you do for a living? When did you graduate school? I'm like, shit, talk to me like I'm a human being, not like a robot. So when I became a banker, it was really easy for me to do these things. And I did do an interview on a podcast about a couple months ago with my coworker, Nancy. We're going to have part two on that very, very soon. But one of the things I wanted to do in light of the pandemic and the virus and everything is I wanted to talk to people who do side hustles. You know, whether it's DoorDash, Uber Eats, Uber, you know, Lyft, any of these things. You know, there's people who do Amazon deliveries now for a living. There's all these people who all of a sudden have these hustles that weren't around 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and they make a living, or better yet, they supplement their income where the income was lacking. And in the midst of the pandemic, with, you know, 20, 30, 40 million people out of work at one point in time during the course of the last 5 months, there are some people who lost their jobs and people who didn't expect to lose their jobs. And it was the sad reality of what was going on in the world. You know, there was just all this uncertainty. You know, like, we think about it, it's like, am I ever going to go into the mall again? Am I ever going to a movie theater again? Well, if I don't go to a movie theater, who gives a shit if James, the Notorious Banker, goes to the movie theater? But guess what? There's someone who makes the popcorn. There's someone who stocks the candy. Someone who takes the tickets. Someone who cleans up after your dirty asses. And there's people who project the film. I mean, those are people who lose their jobs. Now, the person that I'm talking to, her name is Sierra. And one of the things that I learned about her over the course of the last year is, you know, she lives on the other side of the country. She had an issue with a big bank. She ran into me at Bank Better Guy on Twitter, and I talked to her, and she got charged several overdraft fees. And during the beginnings of my vigilante customer service, I showed her how to basically fight for her money back, and she got that money back, and she was thankful. And, you know, I made a follower, I made a friend at that point in time. And it's really cool. It's really cool to develop bonds like that. Because, you know what, $140 is $140, no matter how you slice it. And she used that money to do something she wanted to do. She got to go to Vegas on a trip. And I don't want to say, hey, I'm the reason for that. But you know what? Every little bit helps. And every little bit that the bank takes is, you know, a little bit less that you have for your trips, a little bit less for your disposable income. So to be able to get that for her was very, very empowering. Through the course of just stumbling through my DMs on Twitter, 40, 50 DMs a day I get some ridiculous DMs. I get questions galore, just basic banking questions. Hey, what does Bank of America think about this? What does Wells Fargo think about that? So I answer all these, you know, people without having to tweet at them, and then I do all the tweets as well. I decided one day I wanted to get rid of some of the riffraff in my DMs, because there's some people who are just wasting my time, or some people who are just talking shit or whatever. So I started scrolling through all these people, deleting a lot of their DM interactions with me. And then I get down to stuff about, I don't know, it was about a year ago or so. And then I run into Sierra. And then I was like, oh yeah, I remember that girl. That's the girl that I got the money for. And then I clicked on her account. And then I saw that she had an OnlyFans. And for those of you who don't know, those of you who live under a rock, OnlyFans is a way that people produce content. You know, it's a place where people are artistic. That's the fancy way of saying it. A lot of people will know it as a place where, you know, sex work thrives, where people can post nude pictures, nude videos, you know, content, whether it's, you know, pornographic in nature or softcore or whatever. There are people who use it for content that's not like that. In fact, Cardi B just announced that she has an OnlyFans page where she's not going to be posing nude, but it's a way to directly communicate with her fans for a flat fee. And there's a pro wrestler that I was a big fan of. His name is Enzo Amore. He's actually doing a wrestling school on OnlyFans. So it's a way to produce content, and it's a way to get money directly from fans in a subscription-based way. And of course, the world with Netflix and ESPN Plus and HBO Max, and you name it, there's a subscription for everything. $10 a month at Planet Fitness, $20 a month for this gym, $14.99 for Netflix. We're used to just paying automatically. And people who sell nudes, who sell adult content, said, hey, we want a part of that too. So they sell themselves in a different way. They sell packaged content, photos, conversations, interactions for a flat fee. And it's actually really thriving because, you know, the adult industry right now is nothing because everything is shut down. So, you know, independent contractors who work in the adult industry have to create content in order to sell directly to their fans. And guess what? The average person, the girl next door, the one, you know, probably across the street from you, is probably setting up an OnlyFans account. And it could be a guy as well, setting up an OnlyFans account saying, hey, you know what? I look good, or at least I think that I look great, and I think that I can sell this and I can make money off of it. You know, millennials, I've heard them talk about, and I'm just barely a millennial, by the way. I'm like one of the oldest millennials. I'm 37 years old. Millennials used to say nudes are currency, and they used to be currency in a different way. It used to be, oh my God, I have pictures of this person that I'm not supposed to have. And it used to be stuff that used to be held against people. It used to be stuff that was kind of a negative thing. Revenge porn and stuff like that was really, really bad, you know, starting a decade ago up until very recently. Yours truly, the Notorious Banker, was a victim of revenge porn. It's a long story that I got to tell you in a podcast, but I literally had people trying to get me fired from my job. They were sending pictures that they got through illicit means to my boss, for God's sakes, to my freaking boss. And it was this weird thing where I had to explain what this was. I had to explain what was going on in my personal life at the time. It was a very complicated ordeal. It led to a lot of depression, a lot of stress 5 years ago. And I actually kind of just got rid of that by going to the gym, working out, just trying to be stress-free and getting rid of all these negative people from my life. So I know that fact that nudes are currency, that, you know, sexually explicit videos and pictures are currency, because I saw how they were used against people. And I was a freaking early 30s dude at the time, and that shit was scary. So I could only imagine how women feel whenever they had that used against them. So I'm going to tell you one thing, okay? And you may not believe me, and you may not believe that this is a true American story, but I think it is. The fact of the matter is that people are losing their jobs. And you know what? There's some people who take an unemployment check, and I think that that's your right too as an American if you put into the system. And there's some people who just say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to work again. I'm just going to sell drugs, or I'm going to run guns or whatever like that. You know, here on the border, we have coyotes who smuggle people across the border. There's people who do that instead of fucking work. And yeah, maybe taking a bunch of scandalous pictures of yourself isn't necessarily work to some people, but guess what? You know, even if you don't consider it work, you gotta admire the ambition, the gumption to be able to figure out what the hell to do whenever you can't pay your auto bill, whenever you can't pay your rent, whenever you can't pay your mortgage, whenever the DirecTV bill is past due and your cell phone's past due, and you don't know when work's going to start up again, because despite the fact that, hey, the virus may be peaking in some states or the virus may be going away in some states, guess what? That doesn't necessarily mean that the restaurant you work at, the hotel you work at, the stores that you worked at are ever going to reopen for business. And that's the fucking scary thing about this. So for someone like the person I'm talking to in just a minute, Sierra here, to find a way to create content to see that, hey, you know what, I'm a gorgeous, attractive woman, I'm gonna take pictures of myself, I'm gonna put myself out there, I'm gonna charge $12 a month. The fact of the matter is she's been successful in the first couple of weeks of her project, and it's pretty amazing. Maybe she's not gonna be super duper wealthy doing it at the moment, although, you know, with her work ethic, who knows, but she's able to pay bills. She's able to figure out a way to pay her bills and live her life the way that she wants to without having to mooch off of someone, without having to worry about, hey, the unemployment's drying up or my place of work may never come back. That's the true American story. The Notorious Banker podcast is not necessarily me just bitching about, hey, banks suck and here's why. The Notorious Banker podcast is supposed to empower people with information and knowledge that, yes, in fact, that can be you and you can be successful too. Yes, everyone may not take a nude picture. Maybe someone will find an arts and crafts thing. You know, there's all these Facebook buy and sell shit. I've seen people sell homemade sketches on Facebook. I mean, people have hustle, and that's awesome. You know, one of the things I respect about my younger brother is he never had trouble finding a job. You know, he always worked for call centers and major companies. I won't name the companies because I don't want to get him in trouble or embarrassed. But, you know, he's done the pizza delivery thing. He's done the DoorDash thing. He's done the Lyft thing. He does all these things because, you know what? He has two kids that he has to take care of. He has to hustle in order to pay for that, because guess what? Kids are expensive. And he's going to continue to do that because he is, you know, he's twice the man that I am, even though I'm 5 years older than him. And someone like Sierra, who I just met, is the embodiment of the American spirit. Whenever you can bust your ass, work hard at your job, and then all of a sudden your job is not there, and you go, what do? She finds a way. So this interview is more, it's going to be lighthearted, I'll be honest with you, because I'm curious about the industry that she's in. And I do apologize for the shitty quality of my voice on there. I'm still trying to figure out this Zoom thing. You know, she sounds brilliant and sounds amazing on there. I sound like I'm in a tin can, but you know what? So what? If you can understand me talking and my questions, then that's really good as well. But I wanted to introduce you to Sierra, and I am going to link to her OnlyFans page in my show notes. And if someone doesn't like it, well, then that's tough cookies for you, because you know what? That person deserves a link. That person deserves to have a few hundred people, if not a few thousand people, you know, look at that and say, hey, do I want to invest $12 in someone who figured out a way to make a living? Hell yeah, you should. And you know what? I may not be making a lot of money, and I might do that as well, because you know what? I respect the hell out of her. I respect the hell out of people who find a way. I found a way. I was running out of money, and then all of a sudden, I decided to help in the midst of a pandemic. People get small business PPP loans, going through the bullshit of big banks, the stuff that I used to put people through, I helped them get out of. And I worked hard for that. So you know what? If she can do it, I can do it, and you can do it too. So without further ado, here is my interview with an amazing person. Here is an interview with Sierra. All right, everyone, I'm back. This is James, the Notorious Banker, and I have a special guest. I have a friend of mine. She's actually been a follower of my Twitter account, @BankBetterGuy, for a little over a year. I helped rescue about $140 in overdraft fees from a bank that is not to be named. I don't want to mention the name just in case they get wind of this OnlyFans thing here. But it was a major bank, and she got her money back, and I believe she went to Vegas with that money. And it's one of those things where I, you know, meet someone on Twitter and they stick around. They stick around through all of my BS, all of the Notorious Banker's BS, because they know that we're doing something for the greater good of people. So I want to introduce my friend Sierra to the podcast. How are you doing, Sierra?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was because I was stumbling around my DMs a couple of weeks ago, and I was just like looking through all the people I've talked to over the years because I'm writing a book, and I remembered your story, and I clicked on you, and I just happened to find out that you had an OnlyFans page. And the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast is because I knew that we were, you know, really talkative to each other last year, and one of the things I want to do with this podcast is talk about people's side hustles. You know, with the virus, with everything going on in the world, it's pretty scary out there. People are losing their jobs, you know, 40 million people out of work. So I wanted to ask you, what was your reason to do an OnlyFans? What was the decision-making process in that?
So I was one of the people that lost their job due to everything going on, and jobs stop, but bills don't. And I've had a bunch of friends who have been on OnlyFans and started that and have been pretty successful with it. And I joked around about it quite a bit to people, and people were interested. So I got to the point that I was like, I don't think I have anything to lose, and I'm just going to try my hand at this and see if I can make some money to pay my bills.
Well, and that's excellent. And I want to give you the opportunity to plug your URL. So go ahead and tell the URL to my thousands of followers here.
Yes, my OnlyFans is Sierra X Fawn, C-I-E-R-A. X-F-A-W-N.
All right, sounds good. And I'll link to that in the show notes to the followers here. Viewer discretion advised for such a thing. But of course, if you have a credit card, then that likely means you're 18 years old. So definitely go at your own risk with that. But I definitely wanted to talk to her because she is an American story that a lot of people don't talk about, because like she mentioned, she has friends. She has a lot of people who got into this. And I know a lot of people who do this too. I know a lot of people who do sugar daddy stuff working in a college town here off after all these years. So I respect the fact that there are ways to make money. And of course, I do my thing on Patreon as well. So one of the things I'm always curious about with OnlyFans is the pricing. Because a lot of the times whenever you're talking about pricing nude content or sexual content or something like that, is what is the value? What is the worth of that? And I've met some people, not to denigrate them, who charge like $35 a month for their OnlyFans. And I'm like, you're not Jenna Jameson. You're not Pamela Anderson. You know what I mean? And it's very weird. So, and I've seen some people do it for $3. And I believe Cardi B started an OnlyFans in the last week for $4.99. And she's a famous multi-million-dollar celebrity. She said she wasn't going to do new content on there, but you know, $4.99 a month, a respectable price. But what is your price, and how did you come about that decision to make it that price?
So mine is $12 a month for a subscription. I do post some nude photos right onto my main page, but it's more tease photos and more provocative photos. And then if people do want to see unedited or uncensored pictures, you can charge them per picture in private messages. So I do about $15 depending on what the picture specifically is. And I also do, you know, custom requests and things like that, which depending on what it is will depend what I charge.
I see. And about how many followers do you have right now? How many subscribers do you have as of now, if you don't mind me asking?
So I started my OnlyFans about 13 days ago, I believe, and I'm up to 135 subscribers.
Oh my goodness. That is a good chunk of money. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, it definitely blew up faster than I thought it would. But really, I think it's just all about the promotion.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's the thing with my project. And that's the thing I've noticed just with small businesses in general, because you know, I opened up small business accounts for Bank of America for years. And there would be some people who open up restaurants who couldn't tell you what the
most popular thing on the menu was. And I'm like, the fuck are you doing? Like, how can you have a restaurant and not know what your favorite meal to cook or the favorite seller is, you know? So it didn't make any sense to me. But, you know, $12 a month is a nice fair round number. A lot of major banks, including Wells Fargo, Bank of America, charge $12 a month for their accounts. And I think that level is, we're setting it here because it sounds like a respectable price. It's not too expensive, but we're still able to make a good chunk of money in the long run. That's $144 a year, you know, per person. And that's a hefty chunk of money, especially in today's market.
Yeah, it definitely helps. And, you know, people leave tips on pictures. So I've started, now that I've posted quite a bit, I've asked people, leave a tip on your favorite picture. This way I know what kind of content that people like to see, so I can post more of what people want as opposed to what I think they want to see.
And that makes sense, you know, and that's important whenever you're a small business, is because you want to see what's selling and what's not selling. That way you can kind of tailor your content as is. And that's the way that this podcast was. Like, I was just bitching about things that went wrong at Bank of America while I worked there. And you know, my thing is, there's so many other things wrong with the world beyond me. So I wanted to make sure that other people were being catered to, I guess. So I totally respect that. And typically, how much is a tip that someone leaves on a good picture?
So it's usually between 5 and 15.
Oh wow, that's a good amount of money. And you know, like, the median income in the U.S. is like $60,000. So you know, it's always interesting to see how much money people spend on sexual content. Now, I think I told you before, I used to go to the adult video convention in Vegas. And you would go to these places and you would just see people drop thousands of dollars, you know, and they would spend $500 on sex toys, $100 on autographed DVDs and stuff. So, you know, people have the money. So, you know, your $12 a month is respectable. It's like Planet Fitness, you know, $10 a month. Who the fuck's gonna remember that, you know, $10 a month or $12 a month is coming out of their account? It's a little small amount of money that over the course of 100 plus people is going to be sustainable income for you. And I mean, so far in your 13 days or whatever it's been, I mean, have you started to say, hey, I can make this kind of like a full-time gig?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely potential for that. I don't know if I would want to completely leave, you know, a real full-time job that I have to get up and go to work every day. But OnlyFans does take a lot of your time up because it's a lot of time of replying to messages and taking pictures and doing shoots and making sure that everything looks good. But I think I would ultimately want it to just supplement my income.
That way you could pay for like vacations or pay for things that you want to buy and stuff like that.
Exactly. So there would be less concern about if I want to go to Vegas again, I can just book it and have money to spend while I'm there instead of having to be like, okay, well, what can I save from this paycheck or this paycheck? I just have extra money on the side that I can use for things I want to do.
Well, you know, and that's respectable because I know a lot of people that I know have OnlyFans. That's their only source of income. They're either married to someone rich or dating someone rich, or they have a wealthy family or whatever. So I respect that. I was going to ask you, and I don't mind if, you know, if it's too personal, you don't have to answer, but what type of industry were you in? What type of jobs were you working before you lost them?
I'm a bartender.
A bartender? Oh, okay. So bars are closed out there where you're at?
Yes. I mean, as they are everywhere, no one really knows what's happening. We're going back, we're getting closed again. So it's just been so up and down with everyone I know countrywide in the industry at this point that this seemed like at least some sort of income for now while everything else is just on pause or questionable when it will return at this point.
Understandable. And you know, it's funny because you and I are in the same boat with money making ventures. You know, my podcast and my Patreon have blown up a lot in the last couple of months because I've been doing a lot more content about, you know, the virus, a lot of things going on with banks and helping people through the small business loans and stuff like that. So I've been really busy doing that. So as shitty as it sounds, I've actually been more successful with everything in chaos right now. And I know that you were being impacted by that, but I'm glad that you found some respite in OnlyFans because, you know, it's scary. I know this feeling because a few months ago I was the same way. It's like, how the fuck am I going to pay the bills?
Yeah, and that's where I was at. And I've always, you know, I've been confident in my body. So I was like, if I can make money off of this, then I'm going to try it. And if it fails, I'm not going to take it as a personal hit to myself. But if I have the opportunity, I might as well try my best and make it happen.
No, absolutely. And I was going to share something with you in private. And once this conversation's over, I'll tell you about it. But I've seen some people who start OnlyFans who are body positive. And I'm one of these people who has to be body positive because I was once an overweight dude. So like I work hard at my gym life and all that stuff now. But there are some people who are body positive that, I mean, you are an attractive person, who don't look nearly as attractive as you, that have hundreds of OnlyFans subscribers. And it just blows my mind, you know? So one of the things I wanted to get at with you was the sales element of OnlyFans. You know, it's not just a, hey, I'm naked on here, come find me and come add me. You have to hustle. You have to put yourself out there. You have to post stuff on your Twitter. You have to do all these things to make sure people know that you're alive, just like I do with my line of work here. How difficult is the sales element of it for you?
So I have been posting on all of my social media about it since I started it. Obviously blocked my family from that because I do not need my grandparents to know what I'm out here doing, but I just kind of posted all of my stuff. And that's really when it started to blow up, was me just posting my name for OnlyFans, like not even posting anything about what my content is, just using my name. And then word of mouth and keeping up with promotions. And I try to reply to everybody that messages me and hold conversations with them. And I think it's just, you know, it's about building your brand. Like you are selling yourself as your brand, essentially.
Right, right. And like I said, I definitely know all about that. And, you know, one of the things with my project is I respond to maybe about 40 to 50 DMs a day. It's a crazy amount. That's why when I was scrolling through my stuff, I found you again. And I'm like, wow, I've talked to so many people. And I was like, this is what an attractive girl must feel like. And I felt really proud of myself. I'm like, I literally have so many people I need to reply to. And I go to Dunkin' Donuts to go get my coffee and relax and reply to these DMs. I'm like, holy crap, if I was gorgeous, I could probably, you know, like I could only imagine. It's like every day. It's ridiculous. But no, like you said, the sales element is hard, and you want to make sure that the right people are getting the message and everything. Have you been surprised by anyone who subscribed to your OnlyFans? You're like, wow, I can't believe that person did that.
So with OnlyFans, you can subscribe anonymously and you don't have to put your name or your picture, but the amount of people that I know that use their real names and their pictures are shocking.
Yeah, some people don't care. And you know, that's cool in a sense. And I'm really happy that people are confident in that, because it took a lot for me to admit to like my wife that I watch porn. You know, it took a lot for me to admit to my wife that I went to like the adult convention in Vegas. But once you get over those humps, then life is easy. Like if these people are your friends, if these are people that are in your circle, then it shouldn't be a taboo thing. They should want to know things about you. That way you could have these closer interpersonal relationships. You don't have to be, you know, like really close one-on-one with them, but you know, that shows a level of, hey, I want to support this person in whatever they do. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. And I don't view it as a weird thing at all. Like knowing the people that subscribe to me does not bother me in any way.
I think it's an age thing, right? I you know, it's not gentlemanly to ask, but how old are you?
I'm 28.
28. Okay. Well, I'm 10 years older than you. And I know like people who grew up in my age range, there's still stuff that's so taboo to them. And I know people your age range more comfortable. And then now the kids these days, man, 18, 19, 20 years old, they don't give a shit. They don't care about anything, you know, like nothing is taboo. Nothing is off limits to them.
No, not at all. Like, and it's just, it's all about just being open and comfortable. You cannot have an OnlyFans where you post not safe for work content if you are not comfortable talking about obscure things as soon as you wake up and haven't had your morning coffee.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I guess I wanted to kind of go with that too, because, you know, a lot of the times whenever you're not comfortable with stuff like that, it's a lot of, hey, well, I may want to get a job in some industry somewhere. I wanted to tell you a quick story, and I was thinking about it because I was thinking about talking to you. I talked to a gentleman at my bank when I worked there who was running a wealth management firm. All he does is handle rich people's money. And he said that, you know, when I hire someone, James, what I do is I look at all their social media. I look at their Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and I make a judgment of their character, and I see, do I want this guy on my team? And he was a great customer of mine. I respect the hell out of him. He was a really nice guy. But I told him to his face, I said, if you look at my social media, you're not going to want to hire me, and I don't want you to judge me like that. So I don't think, and I'll say his first name, David, I don't think I'll ever want to work for you, because you're judging me based on stuff that I post about, you know, current events. Or if I post a gym picture, you're going to judge me on that. And I was like, I don't want to work for someone like that. So when it comes to that, when it comes to working in your industry, whenever things get back to normal, are you worried about that content being out there? Or is it just like, you know what, I'm going to go with the flow and whatever ends up somewhere, ends up somewhere.
I'm really just, you know, whatever happens, happens with it. If someone doesn't want to hire me because I had to make ends meet during a global pandemic, then that is not someone that I would want to work for. There's too many people who are in the sex work industry and aren't supported or understood, and people think it's such a taboo thing. But we wouldn't have as many subscribers as we do and be making the money we do if it wasn't becoming more normal and accepted.
Exactly. And I think that's the great thing, that the world is starting to come around on that a little bit. And I think, you know, you see nudity on TV, you see bad language on TV, and you wouldn't see those things 10 years ago because people are like, you know what, there's worse stuff to think about than all this stuff and someone trying to make their money. So I know that you mentioned that, you know, you just want to supplement your income, you know, going forward. Is this something that you can see yourself doing for 5, 10, 15 years? Are you going to be the MILF person on OnlyFans 15 years from now?
I might be. I mean, it's fun. It is honestly really fun to do, and it makes you feel good about yourself. And I think it definitely helps build self-confidence when you are taking very strange angled pictures of your body. And I feel like you get to know your body better, and I don't see myself stopping anytime soon.
Well, that's good. That's good. And I when you said that, I started chuckling because I remember reading somewhere that says it takes the average person like 20 selfies to take the perfect one or something like that. And I totally see that. I just can only imagine you having to blow up your phone just going like, is this the right angle? How many degrees is this angle or whatever? Like, I just imagine that that's the thought process, because, you know, people are asking for certain things and they're like, damn, do I have a protractor? How can I angle myself better?
That's really how it is. It's crazy. My content is very girl next door. I don't do like sexy lingerie photo shoots or any of that because I don't feel like that's real.
Yeah.
So mine is just like me and my real life. I mean, I posted a topless photo eating pizza the other day. So I really just try and be very normal in it.
And I think those are the better ones, you know, because, you know, and that's the thing. I think a lot of like adult video content, stuff like that, is that whole, can I imagine this person being in the next room? Can I imagine this person, you know, going to school with me or working with me or whatever? And I think that's where a lot of people's brains go, because, you know, like, who wants to pay for the unattainable? And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, but they want someone who they can relate to.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I do my content, is I want to be someone, you know, that's relatable and people can feel like they know or could hang out with or get with or whatever their thought process on it may be. Photoshop myself to look crazy. Like, none of my pictures are edited right now. They might be in the future, but as of now, nothing's edited. It is just like raw, real pictures that I've taken myself.
And that's the way to go, in my opinion, too, because like I said, there's some people who do it who, first of all, charge way too much. They charge 5 times the amount of someone who's like a tried and true adult film star or something like that. And then they'll post their Amazon wish list with like freaking $1,000 bags and $500 shoes and shit like that. I'm like, calm down, get 50 subscribers first, you know? Like, you know, you want to reach for the stars, but you got to build, like you said, you got to build a brand. You got to build up to that point. And that's the thing they teach you in banking, is you're not going to hit 100% of your goal right away. Although you did in damn near 13 days or whatever, but you mm-hmm. know what I mean? It takes time. It takes time to build up, and you build confidence, and it just gets a little bit easier. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and prior to this interview on my podcast, we were talking about Bank of America got into some trouble with someone who was needing to breastfeed. And, you know, Bank of America had to settle this lawsuit, and they're going to have to build these breastfeeding pods for women who are nursing and stuff like that. Because I've had some horrible experiences working at Bank of America where I felt women were not getting the time enough to do stuff like that. And funny enough, I correlated to this line of work that you're in because I think it's a women's empowerment thing. You know what I mean? I really think that breastfeeding was even taboo 10 years ago. And now it's something that's accepted and normal and everything. And this line of work, OnlyFans, that you're in is slowly becoming that as well. What do you feel about OnlyFans empowering women, empowering men too, because men do it as well? What do you think its role is playing in the empowerment of people now?
I think it's just making women feel more comfortable in their bodies, which is very important. And it's making women who do sex work viewed in a less derogatory manner. So people, you know, your friends are doing it and you support them. It makes you take a look at everything else that goes on with women and women's rights and having places to best breastfeed and all of that. I think that it just kind of opens people's eyes to it, because if you see someone from high school you thought was attractive with an OnlyFans and you've never, you know, thought about sex work being a positive thing before, but you subscribe to it, it kind of has to change your viewpoint at that rate.
No, it absolutely does. And you kind of tied it together what I was getting at too about the breastfeeding thing as well. Is I think the battles for breastfeeding and the battles for sex workers are one and the same. You know, maybe sometimes the breastfeeders don't necessarily think that about sex workers and vice versa, but it's all about being comfortable in oneself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of things that are similar, you know, in the battles for those things. And I'm really glad that whenever we were talking about it before we hit record here, that you saw that as well, because I really think that that's an important thing. So,
yeah, I think it's really important, and it's just, you know, a people rights issue. Everybody needs to, you know, treat each other equally and give each other opportunities and not view a human body as a bad thing.
Absolutely. And you said something that I wanted to get at whenever you're talking about, hey, someone from my high school who may have an OnlyFans. I don't think anyone I went to high school with would have an OnlyFans. First of all, I sincerely doubt that they're computer or mobile literate, to be honest with you. Everyone has smartphones, but I don't see them with the wherewithal to do that. And I've got to think about this. I don't know if there's anyone, and believe me, I didn't date in high school. I was not popular. I was the chubby kid. I somehow became the homecoming king at my high school, but I don't know how the hell that happened. But I rarely dated. I rarely did any of that stuff. But I was like, do I really want to see someone on OnlyFans now? I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think so. Because I have
there is a market for everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a market for them, but I'm good. Like, they didn't pay attention to me in high school. I'm not paying attention to them in their late 30s. I'm good. I'm done. one of the final things I wanted to ask of you was, what's the most positive thing about OnlyFans work, and what's the one thing that just totally sucks about OnlyFans work?
The most positive thing I would say is, I mean, the money, of course, but aside from that, the body positivity it gives you, because people just say, you know, they tell you how attractive you are all the time, and it definitely helps if you're having a bad day.
Yeah, it feels good. I imagine it feels great.
But the worst part is definitely the message. Some of the messages you get and have to reply to. If you're going to start an OnlyFans, you need to be prepared to be talking about parts of your body before 10 a.m. that you didn't think you would talk about that day at all.
Oh, well, yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, I see these things because there's certain groups that I follow on Facebook and stuff like that. And I just do it casually. I just do it just to get a laugh sometimes, just at what the comments, like, dirty old men say or whatever, and mm-hmm. they're harsh. Like, honestly, like, I've never been in that position where someone would talk to me that way, because I'm not nearly as attractive as most people, but they say some horrible stuff and they mean it as a positive, and it's like cringeworthy, and I'm like, God.
Yeah, it's not great all of the time, but I mean, you kind of just, you take it as it comes and you don't let it get to you. And if someone is trying to say it in a positive light, I just, you know, thank them and keep it moving.
No, and it makes sense. And, you know, I used to think that when I used to work at Bank of America, you know, someone would say, I fucking hate you guys at Bank of America. You guys are horrible. And I would just think, man, I'm making $25 an hour. Go ahead and say what you want. I'm good. You know, I'm paying the bills. So go ahead and have at it. Have your worst.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. And I mean, a lot of these guys or women or, you know, whatever they identify as who subscribe to me, maybe don't have another outlet to say these things or ask these questions. And if I can give them that outlet or answer questions for them or anything like that, I think that's also super cool.
That's really cool too. Like, I'm glad that you're at least comfortable in understanding that there's possibly a backstory behind their bizarre, weird comments sometimes, you know. And to anyone who listens to this, who is a subscriber to Sierra's content, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Like, everyone has their own trip, everyone has their own thing. But keep in mind that you're paying for a service, but that doesn't necessarily mean you treat someone like crap. And you want to still respect the person that you're paying money to. And that's the thing that goes with any business owner whatsoever. You know, they're gladly accepting of your money, but that doesn't mean you have to treat them wrong.
Yeah, and everybody's been really good. I mean, I didn't post for a day, and I just put a status up, and I was like, hey, I'm dealing with some real life stuff. Like, I'm sorry, I'll post tomorrow. And everybody was like, are you okay? Like, don't even worry about it. I hope everything's all right. So it's really nice, too, because I feel like on OnlyFans, people also see you as a human still instead of just a sex object.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad that there's some people like that, because I was afraid that it was 180 degrees the other way, where everyone's just a sex doll that they're talking to, you know, and I'm really glad that they at least see the human element of it, because we all have shitty days. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, you got to OnlyFans because you were out of work. I mean, that's a horrible low to get to a place where you're at least making some money now. You're back up. You don't want to be brought back down again.
No, not at all. And I mean, I've definitely turned this into a positive thing. I'm having fun with it. All my friends are super supportive of it. So it was a scary thing to start, but it's turned out to be really fun and something I genuinely enjoy doing.
That's really, really good. I have one last question for you, then we'll wrap it up here. I was mentioning to you that a lot of banks see sex work as high risk. I do know a lot of people who have had OnlyFans, who had Patreons, who did a lot of like my free cams and all that stuff, had their accounts closed because they were receiving deposits from there. Now, it's not an automatic thing. And I think that there's some kind of telltale signs to avoid whenever, you know, you're getting that kind of money from that kind of content. Banks see this as high risk activity because they think someone's not going to like your content and call their card in stolen to try to get their money back. And the bank's going to spend hundreds of dollars trying to recoup $12 a month or whatever. What do you think about banks seeing this as high risk activity? And keep in mind, they think restaurants are high risk businesses as well. So what do you think about banks defining this line of work as, ooh, it's a little touchy feely, it's high risk, I don't know if we should do it?
I think they need to grow up. Like, it's the same as any other internet transaction. This money isn't going directly into my account. It goes through OnlyFans. It goes through a third party who they handle everything on their end. They're the ones who pay me out. Like, at the end of the day, it's the same as any other internet transaction. And you could go to, like you said, a restaurant and say you didn't like your food and then report your card is stolen. Just the same as you could go spend $3,000 at the mall and then report it stolen. So I just don't think that there's really too much of a difference in it, and people who are going to do things like that are going to do them regardless.
Right. You can't paint everyone with a broad brush, and I really think that that's what banks do, and I think that's unfortunate to them, because at the end of the day, we used to say when I worked at a bank, hey, we value small businesses, and you know, a lot of people don't see sex workers as small business owners. I do, because I know that there's a work element to that. I know that there's a hustle element to be able to make as much money as possible. And I really hope that banks come around with that, because it's not taboo. You gotta put one thing into perspective before I wrap it up here. Working at a branch bank, I worked with a lot of beautiful coworkers, and I don't mean that in a sexually harassing way. They were just gorgeous people. And, you know, of course, they're gonna be wearing nice clothes because they gotta wear dress attire. To me, banks sell sex. To me, when you walk in and you talk to the pretty young thing that's a teller, that might be the old man's that's going to make a deposit, his only kick for the day. You know what I mean? He goes in there to go talk to the pretty girl who's going to accept his deposit. Why is that any different than OnlyFans, in my opinion? I think it's the same, right? Because at the end of the day, we're selling, hey, we have attractive people working here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as going into a bar where people know there's an attractive bartender. They're going to go in more to see that person. So there's really no difference between you know, going out to eat, going to a bank, doing OnlyFans, people are going to spend their money where they want to. And if there's an attractive person at the bank, they're probably going to go to that branch more often than the one that doesn't have it down the street.
And that's absolutely true. I know a lot of my female coworkers used to get flowers every day. They used to get donuts every day, Starbucks coffee. They used to send Starbucks coffee to one particular girl that I worked with. But then the guy started giving all of us Starbucks coffee. So he would spend like $35 a day on coffee. And I was really thankful for him. I've got to tell you, he saved me a couple of $100. So I'm like, hey, lead him on if you want. That's perfectly fine by me because I'm getting my white chocolate mocha every freaking day and I'm thankful for it, you know?
I'm hoping to make enough money with this OnlyFans that I can buy myself Starbucks coffee every day. So I'm going to need everybody to subscribe to me.
Soon enough, my friend. And that's definitely why I wanted to have you on here because I really respect your work. I really want you to be successful with this. And I know that you said you wanted just to have this kind of as a side hustle and you still want to get back into the working world. But I think you're doing a great job so far. And I really, really appreciate you talking to me. One more time, what is your OnlyFans URL?
It is onlyfans.com/SierraXFawn. CIERAXFAWN.
All right, Sierra. And once again, thank you so much for doing this. I knew that it would be a good conversation. I really hope that you enjoyed this conversation too.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was so fun to talk.
No problem. And we'll definitely have to do this again once you hit 1,000 fans.
Yes, we will. I can't wait for that moment.
All right, my friend. Thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Wow, what an interview that was with Sierra. Link of her OnlyFans in the show notes. Like I said in my preamble to my interview with Sierra, and I was listening to it before I recorded this, and holy shit, I feel so impactful. I have so much passion about this stuff. But, you know, to be able to find a way to lose your job, to not know when your job's coming back, and say, hey, you know what, other people are doing this thing, I'm going to give it a try too. And to get over 100 people at $12 a month within 13 days, that's fucking amazing. I would kill to have that amount of money right now, because if I can produce that amount of money living in New Mexico, living in Desolateville over here, I can pay my bills and still have about $300 of spending cash to spend on whatever the hell I want. So that is a decent chunk of money, and I really respect the hell out of Sierra for that. And I thank her so much for the interview. And I really hope to talk to her again, you know, a few months down the road, see where she's at with that, and see how the business is thriving. Because, like I said, it's a very unique American success story where job is gone, find a way to make money, continue on doing that. And I really think that with the positivity that she has, with the outlook that she has on it, I think it's never going to get to her head. I think that she sees this as an opportunity to be successful and to still continue to work at her long-term goals. And I respect that. I respect that. I respect that. So thanks again to Sierra. And I've already taken up too much of your time, my friends. So I'm going to wrap it up here on the Notorious Banker podcast. JamesNotoriousBanker.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, please leave them there. My voicemail line, 575-322-4127. If you have a question, if you want to tell a story about your banking experiences, please leave it there. I have a YouTube channel that is undergoing retooling because I just changed my name. That's going to be up very, very soon with some additional content. I'm going to have a TikTok, if you can freaking believe that. That's coming very soon as well. But follow me at BankBetterGuy. If you want to follow my personal account, it's at JamesBIsRight. But I mostly just like and retweet, you know, college football and NBA content. It's just something that, you know what, if you really believe in what I do, what I'm doing, feel free to follow me as a friend as well, because I appreciate that. I appreciate you giving me the time of day, because, you know, I came out of nowhere. I came like a bat out of hell 2 years ago, and I just wanted to be that negative Nelly about banks. And I still am that person, believe me. I mean, that's what this whole podcast is about, right? But I also want to find things that make people feel good, people feel successful, and have knowledge. Knowledge is power, my friends. I haven't tried out for Jeopardy the last 15 years, qualifying 7 times, because I hate knowledge. No, I fucking love knowledge. I love knowing things. I love being empowered with that. And if this interview with Sierra, if my conversation about the breastfeeding lawsuit with Bank of America has taught you anything today, as you know what, that those things have absolutely no direct impact on me, but I still find them fascinating, and I hope you did too. And remember to go to patreon.com/notoriousbanker. Yes, Sierra has her OnlyFans account. Notorious Banker has his Patreon account. I don't post any scandalous pictures unless you want gym pictures on there. But for as little as $1 a month, one measly dollar a month, you could support the Notorious Banker to fight back against big banks. $2 will give you additional content, such as additional bonus podcasts. I have some interesting stories on these podcasts, including one about sex workers, ironically enough. $5 will get you a copy of my book in digital form when it comes out. $15 will get you a paperback version autographed by yours truly for that. And then there's other tiers as well. While other tiers get you additional things, all I ask for is $1 a month to show solidarity with me as I fight back against big banks. But until we meet again, my friends, my name is James, the Notorious Banker, and I thank you so very much for listening to this podcast. I'll be back really soon with another podcast. So until then, you guys have a great day. Thank you again.